Welcome, everybody, to the 70th episode of The Jewish Drinking Show. I'm your host, Rabbi Drew Kaplan. I'm very excited to welcome first-time guest, Rabbi Michael Bernstein. Rabbi Bernstein, thank you so much for coming to the show.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Awesome. And it is the 70th episode, and we're going to be talking about the number 70 and wine in this episode. Isn't that right?
Quite a bit.
I'm very excited. So for those less familiar with Rabbi Bernstein here, he is, according to his synagogue's website, he is the rabbi of Geshela Torah Synagogue Congregation in Atlanta area.
We're actually in Alpharetta, which is Alpharetta. Right outside Atlanta, but basically okay. Atlanta.
Alpharetta. So he is, he was ordained a conservative rabbi at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York City in 1999. And he came a decade later to Geshela Torah and has been there ever since. For sake of disclosure, everybody, I met Rabbi Bernstein through the Rabbis Without Borders program. We met at an alumni retreat, I believe.
Yeah.
So one thing led to another, and Rabbi Bernstein mentioned his interest in Jewish philosophy, leading us into our topic for this episode, which is, it's about Maharal from Prague, right? Mm-hmm. And his a certain view on wine. I'm curious to get into it. For those less familiar with Maharal from Prague, he is known for this idea. He's popularly associated with the Golem, even though that has really nothing to do with his scholarship, his philosophy, his writings. That's just sort of in the popular cultural imagination, which, by the way, not limited to the Jewish cultural imagination. That's really just burst out and beyond into comics. It's just so that's really not him.
A great story.
What?
That in and of itself would be a great story. I don't think there's any real alcohol connection to it other than,
not that we know of.
Yeah. But the Maharal was a kind of almost mythical figure in that way. But he was just as much of a unbelievable kind of, presence in the part that he really can be traced to have done, philosophy and scholarship of Torah, and this kind of powerful presence in Prague at a time that was really an important transition time for the Jews of Europe.
So for a slight historical context, for those really less familiar with him, first of all, his name is Rabbi Judah Lo Ben Bezalel, and mm-hmm. he was born in the early 16th century and passed away in 1609. So really he was largely active in the late 16th century, it sounds like, right? In mm-hmm. Prague.
We think of Prague as, just one city and one place that we used to, what's the Czech Republic now, Czechoslovakia mm-hmm. at one point. But it was a pretty important central place of Jewish life, the kind of sort of on the outskirts of those places where Jews were living in the hinterlands, but a city, a place that had, and it had a government. A king at the time. It was one of those places where Jews really had a particular role to play in the life around them. They weren't, sort of in the pale of settlement in their own thing. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't like, the assimilation like Germany would become later.
There's something interesting for you about his way of thinking and writing, right?
Yeah. So he's for me one of a number of figures who really, the people who are at the crossroads, who are able to take the Torah and find new ways of connecting it to their world. What was going on at the same time was Lurianic Kabbalah, this sort of very influential way of looking at the Kabbalah was parallel to him at the same time. It wasn't influential on him yet. It was before the Hasidim. It was before the Baal Shem Tov. So it was a kind of moment where you could look at it and say he was taking Western philosophy, which was still the dominant force, in the Western world, and finding a way without, just finding a way that it interweaves with ideas in Judaism.
So it's really comprehensive, all knowledge, really trying to weave and make meaning out of the world. Yeah. What is it that we're discussing? What is this text?
He had a series called Drushim. One is Al Torah, one is Al Mitzvot. These little sections, also tshuva, but they were separate from his main laying out the topics. And I found it really because I was trying to put together something else, actually, involving wine as a different kind of metaphor. Just to be, you know, to be fully transparent, it actually is a very different teaching called, you know, it's based on a line in the show Schitt's Creek, which is a, you know, popular show that became more popular as it started to win a lot of awards. And one of its real sort of contributions to the world was this very open way of looking at, you know, its characters' sexuality. And one of the metaphors that it used was wine as opposed to the label. And I wanted to teach about that. And I was looking for something that was beyond just the idea of the metaphor itself, which is that there are different kinds of wine, white wine, red wine, you know, it doesn't matter. Is it a Merlot? Is it a Chardonnay? But I found this Maharal, which really linked what I was hoping to find, which is wine isn't just a liquid. It's not just a liquid that has a certain color. Wine is a certain kind of way of being in the world that is not just what it is, but also what it came from and what it could become.
The very next episode, we are discussing libation wines. So next week will be Shavuot. So I'm not publishing an episode, but the week after that, May 25th, will feature Professor Avram Shannon discussing this libation wine, Yei Nesef, in the Mishnah and Tosefta. And here's a sneak peek. It's not just wine, that they even expand it in the Tosefta to include even honey. So really, it's almost anything that they're willing to libate is off limits.
And of course, in the Greco-Roman world, we see honey libations, we see oil libations, we see wine libations. Wine being the ordinary table beverage is the most common.
Now that we did that sneak peek, now back to this episode with Rabbi Bernstein.
What the Maharal is going to play off of is a section in the Zohar. Zohar being the central text of Jewish mysticism, or at least of Kabbalah. So we're not going to look at all of the Zohar, but it's one of those classic stories in the Zohar where the sages come and they meet a figure, in this case a boy, who suddenly starts teaching them. It says, you see this boy, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yitzchak Kavu Azle Bo'orcha, Lebe Meronia Litzipuri, they're on their way from one place to another, Meron to Tzipuri, it's in the north of Israel, Galilee. And they come across this boy, Bechamra Bekita. He's lugging the Devusha, he's lugging this cart of sweetened wine. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, name a meal of Doraita Venazil. Tell me a word of Torah and
then go.
Yeah. Petach Rabbi Yitzchak va'amar. So here's the word of Torah. Rabbi Yitzchak is the one who opens up with this word of Torah. V'chikech kiyayin atov holech l'dodi l'meshar. So this is from the Song of Songs. It basically says, you know, the roof of your mouth is like sweet wine. Da yena doraita. This is Torah wine, right? This is wine of Torah. Now, what I want to focus on, because the Maharal is going to do this, these are not metaphors in the sense where you say, oh, we're calling Torah wine because the Torah, like wine, right? They are more symbols, which is a whole classic thing in terms of Kabbalah, where the wine itself is real, but it also is Torah, right? There's a physical sensation that's happening. There's an element of wine that is simultaneously the most powerful kind of experience of Torah. And at the same time, wine is something that leads to drunkenness and debauchery and every other one you want to say, right? What are we going to do with the idea that the same substance that can make you so intoxicated that you can't possibly walk straight, let alone live in the right manner, is also compared to Torah. There's Torah wine, and then there's the kind of wine that puts you off into a dangerous place. Here we are in the this little section itself. This is 23. The one that I, you know, had focused on before is a little bit later, 27 or 28. But he's going to quote the Zohar that we just looked at, or the continuation of that Zohar. Mm-hmm. And he's going to say, there's going to be this concept of wine as yayin de mintara, which is like yayin, that is wine that is reserved or guarded, right? And yayin bisha, the wine that is not, you know, under those circumstances. Wine itself, and this is going to get into the tiny bit of the mystical, both more than someone is going to learn about Sfirot in the first place, the emanations of God that are various qualities, and also way too overstated in terms of you know, how deep it goes. But wine, especially red wine, the color red and the acts of wine is what is called givura. It is on the left side of the tree, which is generally the harsher, sometimes the more close to what we think of as evil, but at the very least more disciplined, more judgmental. And givura means strength, but in this case, it really means judgment. As opposed to water, which is on the side of chesed, the side of compassion. And the other great liquid, oil, you know, which if you think about it, is also beaten from a something that grows on a tree or on a plant, right? You can beat olives and make oil with it. You can crush grapes and make wine with it. But oil is on a higher light, basically. So what does this mean? It means that wine is in a place where there is already some danger. Whenever you are facing the left side of the tree of knowledge, the sfirot, the, you know, this whole section, you're in a little bit of danger because that evokes God's judgment. So we are already treading in this kind of more of a challenging ground. Yayin Mintara, the reserve wine, you know, the wine in the top shelf, is actually at the top shelf of the tree, which is Binah. Binah is also on the left side, but Binah is usually understood as discernment. So there is a kind of wine that hops up from Gevura to Binah, which is a much safer place, because even though it's right and left, it's on this much higher realm, a kind of, you know, way of looking at the Sfirot as a sort of a map of God's moods. And what's important is that we connect. This is just a classic piece of Kabbalah. We connect to these elements in God through our actions in this world, right? So the lower wine and the higher wine, if you're going to look at it that way, has its analog in the wine we actually sanctify. So when you take the good wine and you keep it good wine and you hold it in the world of holiness, then you are accessing this part of God, this Binah. And when you take the other wine and you use it in a way that drifts from holiness or even goes all the way into, you know, feast, the Maharal is going to do something really cool. The Maharal is going to say, so when it comes to this concept, we have a statement in Eruvin, in the Talmud section of Eruvin, that says, when wine goes in, secrets come out, right? Niknas yayin yatzas sod.
65a or 64a?
Very nice. 65, I think. It's listed here in a second.
I think it's Rabbi Chanim?
Yes. What he says, actually, is that a person who can hold their wine, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily translate it as hold their liquor as much as keep their head when they drink, which I guess is hold their liquor. But in other words, it's not somebody who can, you know, like down lots and lots of shots and still walk a straight line. It's somebody who can keep their wits about them drinking wine is as wise as the Sanhedrin. And the reason there is going to be the opposite of what the Maharal uses it as. That normally, when someone drinks wine, they get all kind of, shickered up. They get all kind of drunk and they divulge secrets, right?
Quick, 65A, it's Rabbi Chia.
Chia, okay. Amar Rabbi Chia kol yemei mityashev b'yeno yeshbo midat shivim zekeimim. All who keep their wits about them have the same knowledge as the 70 elders. Yayin natan b'shivim otiyot. So here is where we get this great little thing that the Maharal plays on. Niknas bohayayin, Niknas yayin yatsa sod means, it's easy to lose yourself when you drink wine and you start divulging secrets. But what the Maharal is saying is actually, when you drink wine and hold your counsel, you are on another level, because wine will normally make you so intoxicated. It takes a special person to be able to keep the wine secrets inside. So when the Zohar is talking about the good wine and the impure wine, the Maharal says, we're really talking about wine now. That a person who gets drunk and divulges their secrets, it doesn't matter whether this has been touched by Gentiles or not, it's the kind of wine that makes you divulge. And divulging is the part of wine that is dangerous. Because the word divulge in Hebrew is gilui, right? To reveal. And gilui has another place where you find it that's not so great in the eyes of the rabbis, and that's gilui ariot, the revealing of nakedness.
Right, and Leviticus chapter 18 and 20.
Yes, and again, I'm going to give you my disclaimer. Some of the things that are called gilui ariot, things that are sexual transgressions, just like I feel about wine being handled by people who aren't Jewish being an ethical point that I feel is worth doing differently. Very much I do not want to connect these particular sexual sins with the question of sexuality and proscribed sexuality and everything else. But the part that the Maharal is saying is drunken sexuality, that has a certain resonance. Wine makes you lose your inhibitions, makes you lose your righteousness, makes you lose your holiness. And he'll make the connection to that in Gentiles, which is a fairly common connection that, again, I'm going to hop off the exit before we get there. So I was saying that the Maharal will follow the Zohar and the Halakha here and make this a difference between Gentiles and Jews, but also open up a door that this is also about the kind of person you are, right? So even though those things may be associated in negative and positive, it works just as well by thinking about how do we approach something like wine. These are things that we are aware of, because drinking is not something that you only do because you slipped from the high rung. You drink because part of it is on a regular holiday, you sanctify. On Pesach, you have four cups of wine, and on Purim, it's another story altogether. So how do we justify this? In order to understand a little bit Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar. Basically, the nations of the world are 70, classic idea, and Israel is one. Also a classic idea. There's one Israel, there are 70 nations of the world. Okay, and we'll look at it all inside. What is 70? What letter is 70 in the alphabet? Ayin. What letter is one in the alphabet? And the Maharal tells us, which is how you know he's not Sephardi, that the Aleph and the Ayin sound pretty much the same. But what we're going to find is we've got an issue because that famous statement of wine going in and the secret going out, the gematria of Yayin is 70.
Mm-hmm.
The number of, and then the gematria of Sod is also 70. So they equal each other. So the Maharal, here's where I think it's going to really click, is to say, there's something about the nations where wine reveals secrets in a crass way, that the 70 is a 70 of just spilling everything. And so wine becomes this dangerous force for the nations because
it's a little bit uncontrolled, it sounds like.
Exactly. It's uncontrolled, and it's also revealing things in a way that is inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could just have, but Israel, you know, the nation of Israel doesn't do that. It doesn't get out of control. Mm-hmm. But what's beautiful here is that Israel turns it on its head. The wine does reveal, but it reveals in a holy way. Mm. It doesn't go out, Gilui Ariot and Galut, all of these things that get exiled. And, you know, because I'm sure these are all resonances intertextually, Noah, who plants the vine, and what happens? He's revealed naked, right? Wine, when the daughters of Lot give him wine and they have this, you know, complete, you know, Gilui Ariot of incest, and that creates Moab and Ammon. All of those are the ways in which wine just sort of spills out into the world.
Let me say a couple of things. One is, so for those keeping score at home, that is in Genesis 9 and Genesis 19, those two stories. But two other things. One is, we don't really see a lot of drinking stories throughout the five books of Moses. And those two are really well, first of all, the Noah story in chapter 9 of Genesis is the very first appearance of wine or any alcoholic beverage within the entirety of the Tanakh and the Bible. But also, as you pointed out, it's the generation, it's the creation of three different nations. So in chapter 9, it's the, through Noah's getting drunk, it's the creation of Canaan. And then people can check out episode number 3 of the Jewish Drinking Show for more on how that came about. And then also with Lot and his daughters, I mean, that is at least a lot more clear and overt as far as the creation of Ammon and Moab. So right. Those are certainly not only other nations, but more than that, they, first of all, the nations were created out of incestual relationships, but also later on, we mentioned earlier, Leviticus chapters 18 and 20, the chapter 18 is specifically introduced by saying, don't do like the practices of the nation from which you came, Egypt, nor the land to which you're going, which is Canaan. They practice these different sexual transgressions. Don't do like that. So there's a lot of that connection between sex, wine, sexual transgressions, and Gentiles.
I mean, the way I understand Noah is it doesn't create Canaan. It's just creating the negativity around.
So he's not involved in that reproductive action. People can listen to it.
I think that this is very much the Maharal's MO. What is it about wine? It's not just, and I think the Talmud basically uses the language of, hey, if you can heap it together, you must be a tzaddik. But it's, you either lose control, you lose less control, or you're a tzaddik, you're a righteous person, you're sage, you're as smart as the Sanhedrin, and you lose no control. The Maharal flips it and says, there is something being revealed here, but you're revealing it on the inside. You're not losing control like Noach and Lot. You're not losing control like somebody like Ahasuerus. You're losing the barrier, and you're touching the secret, but you're keeping it inside. It is quiet and introspective. And so the 70 of Israel works because it is taking something that could be garish and crass and the gaze of, you know, what's inappropriate to look at, and becoming the mystical eye, the inner way of seeing. And wine does that because the secret of wine, the nistar, the inside of wine, is its hiddenness. And why? Because unlike everything else, wine is transformed over time. Wine has the power of the development of its character over time. Uka asher hayayin niknaspa adam. When wine goes into a person, az poel ha adam agalu yoter, the person gets looser, let's call it. Ki yatza hayayin mimadregato shiyesh lo madregat anistar. When wine goes in on the level that is the level of what is hidden, kasher yayin b'mispar sod, because yayin is the same number as sod, 70, niknas bit adam hagashmi she'en lo devar zeh ha'hester rak hagalui. It undoes what is hidden in a person. Ubezeh yotze hayayin min hasod el hagalui. So wine brings things from secret to the revealed. Ba'az yesh kan gilui yoter v'yoter, and things get more and more revealed. Ulekach ka'asher niknas hayayin shehisod ba'adam, az yotzei ha'adam el ha'galui legamrei v'yotzei sod. Person gets completely off their ability to hold
things. To keep it together.
To keep it together. Aval, but ka'asher ein hayayin po'el ba'adam ha'galui, when wine doesn't make a person physically lose it on the level of gashmiut, on the level of the physical world, umit yashav b'yayin, and he's able to be collected, az yesh ba'oto adam midat shivim zekemin. This person has the knowledge of the 70 elders, shehem beitin mufla. That is this wondrous beitin. Later or earlier, he makes a pun that aleph, which is the one, as opposed to the 70, is Pella. Aleph Lamed Pei, which is the word Aleph, is Pei Lamed Aleph, which is the word Pella, which is wondrous.
Wonder.
So in wine, you don't get the Aleph, but you get the Pella. You get the Mufla. So the Beitin Mufla, the Hembe Mispar Sod, and that's 70. Ulekach lo yatza hayayin ela gilui v'hu mityashev yayino. But the key here is going to be, when all of that happens, voila, 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 lekach hu shakul kamo shivim sanhedrin, b'mispar sod v'hem beitin mufla v'ein b'hem yayin yotze ala galui, aval b'shar adam po ala galui ad shemidya. Fine. With everybody else, it makes them drunk. It kind of throws them off. I think, by the way, your point about the fact that this is a sociological point is even stronger proven, because after all of this mystical piece of it, the Maharal goes on to take a fairly, you know, technical point of, if this is so important, why wasn't it said in the Torah explicitly? And he goes into the idea that sometimes things that are more important are the things that come out of the Divrei Chachamim, that the sages' words. So a lot of this clearly is getting up in front of a congregation and saying, you know, this is important. This isn't just, you know, don't hang out with people who aren't Jewish and don't drink wine that someone's going to sneak off and offer. This is what it's about. But to turn back to the original idea here, wine is not a metaphor. Wine is in and of itself the object that creates the power of development, of something that has been brought out, its secrets have been revealed. So it's not just that wine enters into a person and either makes them sloppy drunk or it makes them mystically enlightened. In fact, here it's, I think, from, is it Sanhedrin? Chamra Rechani.
That's Rava. So yeah, Rava says Chamra Rechani Vachachin. So
yeah,
he says spices right, and wine make me, I don't know, it opens up his mind. Rava is, and by the way, this has nothing to do with Maharal, but Rava is one of the biggest wine fans in the Talmud.
As opposed to is it Rav Papa who's the brewer?
Right, as opposed to Rava's student, Rav Papa, who's the biggest beer baron in the Bavli.
I like it. I like the Coke versus Pepsi aspect.
There's a particular exchange in Masechet Brachot, in Tractate Brachot, where Rava says something specifically, like there's some sort of remedy that involves wine. And he says, what do you do? You're a beer drinker. What do you? And so Rav Papa has an answer, but yeah.
That's very funny. That statement is basically understood that only good wine enlightens you. But here we're going to flip it and say only good, quote unquote, only the right people are enlightened by wine.
Meaning right? Jewish wine versus Yain Nesef?
Well, this is where I think you would clearly find that here. Uh-huh. But I think that because the Maharal is not talking about the wine itself, but the one who is consuming it, you could make an argument, a pretty classic argument for, you know, more contemporary Judaism, mm-hmm. that we're not talking about the ontological difference between Jews and non-Jews, but the ethical. And therefore, mm-hmm. you know, there are Jews who are going to be, you know, unable to drink wine under any circumstances in a enlightened way. And there are going to be people outside the Jewish community who are wise and can drink wine in a light way. But here, clearly, this is being used to bolster Yain Nesech. And it's another interesting question sociologically that I'm fascinated by. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that Prague has a particular role here because there are those who, there's a Gershom Scholem piece on the Star of David, where the understanding is that symbol of the Star of David became the symbol of the Jewish people because they were given the opportunity to have a flag to represent the Jewish community when the king of Prague, basically, the ruler, mm-hmm. and they needed to choose something. And they chose that symbol, which had been a mystical symbol and not really David's and everything else, but had been put on a lot of books by printers. And they said, well, there's a good symbol. And it's just easy, you know, to switch the cross for the star. In other words, Prague is one of these places where a lot of modern Jewish identity starts to develop. But that would make it that's a dissertation, not a podcast. But what I love about this is what he's saying is the power of wine is not it reveals in some cases and hides in some cases. It always reveals. Hmm. The question is, does it reveal a secret that is enlightening, or does it reveal gossip and perhaps the loss of inhibition? Is it gilui, that the revelation of mystical secrets, or is it gilui ariot, the loosening of morals? And just, you know, Purim is obviously the place where it gets put to the test. Right? Because, you know, for the most part, the Gemara looks at Purim as a time that you get drunk enough. It's kind of a danger. And you get so drunk that you don't know the difference between, you know, technically it's not Mordechai and Haman, but blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman. It's another story. But you get drunk enough. And you have, was it Rav and Rav Zera? And the...
Rabba and Rabbi Zera, yeah.
Rabba and Rabbi Zera.
Rava's student was the one who said that you need to get drunk, but then the story that follows is his teacher Rava and Rabbi Zera getting drunk.
Gotcha. One way to look at Purim is let's just get intoxicated and forget about the world, but the Maharal is basically saying actually this is the place in which you reach that level that you can actually survive a world with no contradiction between the Mordechais and the Hamans. That's a Kabbalistic idea, right? That as you go higher up, things that seem obvious divisions become sort of all part of one God, right? So in our world, if you start treating the Hamans like the Mordechais, that's a terrible thing. But on some level, everything fuses. But what I wanted to say is Purim is the revealed hiddenness. God doesn't appear in the story, as we all know. It's nistar, it's hidden. We need wine to bring out this element of Purim. Hakol b'shvil ki hayayin yotzei mipnimit. It's all because wine comes from the interior of the grape, ha'anav. A devar shehu nistar, re'ui hel devar shehu Elohi. This is why God chooses it, because a secret thing is worthy of God. Lekach yayin b'mispar sod, and then we get back into the gematria. So the kicker is that it's not just that wine is something that could be used for the holiest of things and something that can be used for the most dangerous of things, is that wine reveals the nature of God. That the nature of God is something that is hidden, that can be revealed in a certain way, that actually allows us to develop, allows us to become more, you know, the way that we understand wine, to become more mature, more complex, to bring up the notes and all the other stuff, as opposed to everything else, which simply is an excess. You know, that's just the jumping off point. And I think that you're doing this, you know, podcast about Jewish drinking. I mean, I will say that there is something I think resonant about the idea that it is such a part of Judaism and also such a dangerous part of Judaism.
That's what makes it so fascinating. It's so dynamic.
Exactly. And the dynamic is something that hopefully, you know, going back to the Maharal as a real figure in time, his concern was probably just the very tiniest beginning of the concern of modernity, which is, right, do we have something that's special that's only ours and the rest of the world perverts it? Or are we all facing those same demons, right? Are we human just like everybody else? And Torah is just as much a dangerous thing, the holiest possible connection to God, and something that can lead us in a very dangerous, unhinged, not our best self kind of way. And the Maharal articulates elsewhere the beginnings of that idea. But here I think wine becomes our way of connecting to that, the stakes of how we use something so dynamic.
Rabbi Bernstein, thank you so much. This is a really fascinating episode. Is there anything you want to share, anything you want to promote, anything you got going on in the works?
Well, you know, I'm a pulpit rabbi. You know, I'm a small town caveman lawyer, pulpit rabbi, doing my own thing. So, but I will say, because of the world of Zoom and everything else, that we all can kind of share each other's community, I will be teaching a session on Shavuot of what I mentioned before was the wine as part of that Schitt's Creek idea and everything else, where we'll touch on this. So if anyone is interested, maybe we'll put my information, direct information to reach me. I also put out a daily message called The Daily Breath that anyone is welcome to be on the mailing list for. Just a little shot of inspiration for each day. Some of it is, sort of, it goes to all sorts of different places. So if you find this conversation of finding meaning interesting, and you want to do that again, you can contact me directly. I'd be happy to add you to the mailing list. And if you are ever in Alpharetta or virtually would like to join us at Gesher LaTorah, our website is wearegesher.org, and you are always welcome to join us. So
awesome. Thank you. All right. Well, Rabbi Bernstein, thank you so much. This was great. And L'chaim.
L'chaim.